नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय थम थम तिक्ष्णचित्तं अधिफामचेष्टितम् वेक्ष्यन्तराकोशपरिच्छदि दाव शिवात् वरास्त्रियं तात् प्रभया च दास्यते निरीक्ष्यमाने जननी यथेष्टः Putana's Rakshashi's heart was fierce and cruel, but she looked like a very affectionate mother. Thus she resembled a sharp sword in a soft sheath. Although seeing her within the room, Yashoda and Rohini, overwhelmed by her beauty, did not stop her, but remained silent because she treated the child like a mother. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Although Putana was an outsider, and although she personified fierce death because of the determination within her heart to kill the child, when she directly came and placed the child on her lap to offer the child her breast to suck, the mothers were so captivated by her beauty that they did not prohibit her. Sometimes a beautiful woman is dangerous, because everyone being captivated by external beauty, Maya Mohita, is unable to understand what is in her mind. Those who are captivated by the beauty of the external energy are called Maya Mohita. Mohitam nabijanati mam ebya param abhyayam. Natevidu swarat katim hibishnum durashaya yehi bahirartamanina. Here, of course, the two mothers, Rohini and Yashoda, were not Maya Mohita, deluded by the external energy. But to develop the pastimes of the Lord, they were captivated by Yoga Maya. Such Maya Moha is the action of Yoga Maya. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 6, entitled The Killing of the Demon Putana, Text 9. Putana was sent by Kamsa, specifically to kill all the newborn children in all of the areas surrounding Mathura. He feared that the child who was prophesied to kill him was born somewhere. In order to protect his own life, he was willing to ruthlessly murder thousands of baby children, harmless, innocent, helpless, with no regret, with no second thought. This is to the extent the false ego could cover a person's natural spiritual qualities. Because Kamsa, like everyone else, is part and parcel of Krishna. His soul is Satchit Ananda, spiritual, divine in every way. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Satya Kabunai. His nature is to love Krishna with unconditional, unmotivated devotion. That is who he is. This ahankar can so thoroughly cover and program one's mind and intelligence. That he's thinking Krishna, the ultimate object of his love, to be his worst enemy. And he's seeing all these innocent baby children as potential enemies. And he knows that only one was predicted to kill him. But he's willing to murder tens and thousands to reach that one. Why? Because his ego had programmed him so much to see everything centered around his happiness, his enjoyment, his sustenance. This is the beginning seed of ahankar. When we put ourself in the center of our lives and in the center of our considerations of creation. If it feels good for me, if it's safe for me, then I'll be happy. Truth is to put God in the center. Because factually, God is the center. He is in the center. He is the root of the tree. But when we want to become the root of the tree, that's the beginning of the false ego. I want to be the controller. I want to be the proprietor. I want to be the enjoyer. We never were, we are not, and we never will be. But the ahankar gives us this misconception. And on that basis, we could do anything. And Kamsa, he's a philosopher. Factually, he's a yogi. He's practiced yoga that nobody could even imagine in this world today. He developed such supernatural powers. He personally challenged all the other demons in the universe who had extraordinary powers and defeated every single one of them. He basically put them in a position where they had two choices, to either die or surrender to him. And most of them surrendered to him. That's why we see all these putanas and Bakasuras and Akasuras, they're all being sent by Kamsa to kill children, to kill Krishna. It's not that they're loyal, loving servants of Kamsa. It's either they die or they surrender. That was Kamsa's program. And how the false ego can justify our own selfishness. It's actually incredible. A person has a certain attitude, a certain conviction, a certain idea, a certain fear, and can justify practically anything is all right on that basis. Kamsa is a symbol of the potential of the ego within every one of us. Within every one of us, that potential is there. Maybe not with the same expansive power. Quantitatively, Kamsa was huge. But the same attitude could be there. So he sends Putana, kill every baby that's been born in the recent past. And he knew how to, he was actually an excellent manager from a material perspective. If only he added Krishna to it. Srila Prabhupada explained, without Krishna, everything is zero. You could have million zeros, but it all adds up to zero. If you put one in front, it becomes many millions and billions and trillions and quadrillions. Well, we have heard in our bhakti society about how devotional service, a leader should engage people to dovetail their propensities. Kamsa was expert at that. When he saw Putana, he knew her propensities and expertly engaged her. The only problem is it was for his ego, his selfishness, instead of for Krishna. So she could fly. And she was flying around looking for babies. And no one could stop her. By one means or another, she would get to every single baby she saw. And then mercilessly eat their flesh and drink their blood. Do you think she felt any sympathy for these babies as they were crying and screaming and their innocent little baby eyes are looking at her piteously, begging for mercy? She had no regret. She ate them. This is how the false ego can cover us. She thought that that was what they were for. They were to be eaten by her. It's not so different in human society today. Yes? These little calves and cows, goats, you look in their eyes at a slaughterhouse, and they're looking at the people about to slaughter them the same way the little babies were looking at Putana. Helpless, innocent. They're slaughtered by the tens and millions. No regret. Why? Because the false ego programs us to believe that this is the way it's supposed to be. They were meant to be eaten by us. Well, that same psychology is extended in Putana when she comes to eat your babies. Same mentality of ego when Hitler was killing millions and millions of people he didn't like. They were just meant to be killed by him. There was no regret. So we see in the world genocide, terrible cruelty, slavery, persecution, throughout history. It's the same principle, the false ego. We want to put ourselves in the center, And sometimes in order to put myself in the center, I have to put my nation in the center. I have to put my religion in the center. I have to put my race in the center. I have to put my family in the center. I have to put the team of my city in the center. Because I'm in the center, we want anything that's related to me, we try to put in the center. And anything else outside of that, we're justified to do the needful. So Putana, she heard somehow or other by her, she was really a yogi, yogini. She could change her form any way she wanted. Now some of us, we're not very beautiful. Somehow or other, our karma's just not very beautiful. So we get cosmetics, we get makeup, and we go to, you know, yoga studios or gyms, and somehow or other try to compensate. Yes? But no matter what you do, it's just not who you are in this lifetime. Yes? The cosmetic industry, billions and billions of dollars are spent by people who just, they don't like the way they look. I mean, if we're just going to tell it as it is, hate to tell you this, but the only reason why anybody buys cosmetics is they don't like the way they look. If they really like the way they look, why would they be coloring it and painting it all different designs? Right? We want to look different. Yes, the heavenly ladies, they don't need cosmetics. Whatever, you know, any cosmetic you put on a heavenly damsel only covers their beauty. But in this material world, it covers either our ugliness or our ordinariness, to try to make us look beautiful. Yes? So, what can you do? But Putana, how powerful she was. She was really ugly. But the thing is, among Rakshashis, people thought she was really beautiful. Because everybody has their own conception. But she wanted to become beautiful by human eyes, so she just chanted a mantra and she had a body that was absolutely stunning, extraordinary. Even heavenly damsels were jealous of her. She didn't just look like a beautiful woman from the heavens. People thought she was Lakshmi, the supreme source of all beauty. Can you imagine having that power? If you want to charm some man or woman, you just go chant a mantra and whoop. And all of a sudden you have this whoop that's so beautiful. Unbelievable. So she came in dressed so nicely, walked right into Nanda Maharaj's house. Yashoda, Rohini, and all the Brijabasis, Nanda Maharaj was not there. He was in Mathura. She came just at a good time, very strategically. And they thought, just by seeing her charm and her beauty, and she looked like such a loving, gracious, cultured woman, they felt that Lakshmi had come to bless their baby. That was their thinking. And Yashoda, Mai, and Rohini, it's not that they're just simple people who don't understand things. They're nityasiddhas. They were free of karma. They are free of maya. They were beyond illusion. Rohini is Balaram's eternal mother in Goloka Vrindavan. Yashoda Mai is Krishna's eternal mother in Goloka. They descended to assist Krishna in his pastimes. So how possibly could the mother, the eternal mother and father of the absolute truth beyond Maya, be subject to such a grotesque and dangerous illusion? To think that this monstrous Rakshasi was a beautiful woman. Her intent, it describes in this verse and purport, she was determined to kill Krishna. Now, can you imagine what type of determination it took her to perform tapasya, to get these supernatural powers she had? Inconceivable determination. And all of her powers were focused with Vyabhashayatmaka here. Krishna says those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, their aim is one. She was like that, but for the wrong purpose. Instead of resolute in purpose to please Krishna, she was resolute in purpose with a vow of determination to kill Krishna. Why couldn't Yashoda and Rohini see that? We read about how Yashoda Mai and Rohini was loved Krishna like Yashoda did. They were worrying about Krishna at every second. Shukadev Goswami said they were in the divine supreme ecstasy of anxiety constantly. What does that mean? Usually we think anxiety is different than ecstasy. Vaikuntha means the place of no anxiety. But here in the highest Vaikuntha, she's in anxiety. But it's the anxiety of love. It increases the intensity and the nature of the love. It's dynamic. That's lila. So they were always in anxiety for Krishna. They were not thinking he's the supreme absolute truth, the source of the universal form, nothing can harm him. They were thinking he's an ordinary baby. They just loved him more than anybody could love God. Because he was God. At every moment, they were worrying about his protection. And that went through every stage of his life. And so now he's only a couple days old. Why couldn't they see it? It is explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and our Acharyas that Krishna's Lila Shakti, his Yogamaya potency, which activates and intensifies the dynamics of the sweet, loving relationships between Krishna and his devotees on the liberated state of prema, or love. It's Yogamaya that makes Rohini and Yashoda think that Swayam Bhagavan is an ordinary little baby depending on them. That is Yogamaya, to facilitate loving relationships. And similarly, it was Yogamaya that covered Rohini and Yashoda from recognizing who was this Rakshashi, Putana and what was her purpose? This described that the Lila Shakti, the pastime potency of the Lord, personally invited Putana to Vrindavan. She didn't know what was happening. Nobody knew what was happening. But when she walked in, fiercely determined with envy and hatred to murder this baby, little baby Krishna, he looked at her and closed his eyes because he was in the role of a helpless little baby child, and here's this woman who's coming to kill him. So he closed his eyes as if he was scared. Amazing. He's feared by fear personified, but he's appearing to be scared. Sometimes if you're in a helpless condition and there's nothing you can do, you just close your eyes. Krishna was pretending to be like that. There are many reasons he closed his eyes. Our acharyas are extremely poetic and insightful in how they realize Krishna's inner heart's motives. One of the many reasons is Krishna knew that his glance is all auspicious. And if he cast his glance on Putana, he would make her auspicious. But his purpose was not to make her just auspicious. His purpose was to give her the ultimate liberation in the spiritual world. So she had to be inauspicious in order to do what she was about to do. He closed his eyes. And Putana picked up the little baby right in front of everybody and put Krishna on her lap. Everyone was watching. They were so happy about it. They felt so blessed. And then she went to put her breast in his mouth, which was coated with deadly poison. It is said when Krishna saw her, he could understand she was like a very treacherous, sharp sword in a soft, beautifully ornamented sheath or casing. You can't see by the externals what the reality may be. Yesterday we were speaking an opposite conception of this with the example of Pundarik Vidyaniti. He looked like a very attached, materialistic, not arrogant, but very attached, infatuated by material energy. He just looked like a typical gross materialist, even more. But inside his heart was total renunciation in the highest level of ecstatic love for God. He looks like a materialist. What he's wearing, his actions, his possessions. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is crying for his association. Krishna, in the love of Sri Radha, the highest, purest, culmination of all love is Sri Radha's love. And Lord Chaitanya was so lonely for Pundarik Vidyaniti. He was crying out, "Pundarik, my father, Pundarik, my father, when will you come?" And the devotees they never saw Lord Chaitanya in this mood before. They asked him, who is this Pundarika? They were talking among themselves. Who could this be? Everyone in the world, literally, practically everyone, saw him as just a wealthy landowner who was just infatuated by sense gratification. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead saw that even Swamis and Goswamis could not possibly attain a fraction of his renunciation and love, that he was crying for the association of Pundarika. And he considered him his own father. And later, the most renounced person in the whole world, Gadadhar Pandit, Lord Chaitanya had previously proclaimed that Gadadhar Pandit, you have never had the slightest inclination towards sense enjoyment. You've never had the slightest inclination toward possessing anything. You've been totally absorbed in Krishna. You've had no inclination toward mundane scholarship like everyone else in Navadvip. He's Radharani Gadadhar. And yet, when it was revealed what was below the surface of the appearance of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, Gadadhar Pandit surrendered to him, accepted him as his father and his guru. The nature, and these stories are told to show us, to expose us, because in this world, the tendency is so all-pervading that we value things according to very, very superficial external things. Digvijay Pandit, we discussed him yesterday too. People were glorifying him so much because he was a scholar. Here we have Pundarik Vidyanidhi and Digvijay Pandit. Externally, they're not that much different. Pundarik had people fanning him with chamaras, and Digvijay Pandit had people fanning him with chamaras. They were both dressed elegantly. They were both great scholars. Lord Chaitanya said about Digvijay, he has no good qualities. Krishna will cut down his ego. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he was crying, Father, Father, I want your association. Yes, even in devotional service, sometimes a person's external accomplishments are seen as all in all. But Krishna sees what's inside. What is our intent? Renunciation can either infatuate our ego, or renunciation can purify us of the ego. That's according to our intent. Knowledge can infatuate our ego, or if we understand the knowledge that we are accumulating, it will purify our ego. Whatever skills we have, Duryodhana had tremendous skills, but they infatuated his ego. Arjuna had the same skills, but they purified his ego. So it is our tendency to see things in such a superficial way. Why do we see things in such a superficial way? It's because of our own false egos. Because our own life is so superficial and based on such artificial standards that we appreciate those things in others, and we cannot appreciate other things unless we become very genuine and real. We cannot appreciate things that are genuine and real. And just because we're devotees, in and of itself, doesn't change that. That's what we read about Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam. What does it really mean to be a devotee? It means to go beyond those superficialities and externals and go deep, so that our external efforts and our external knowledge and our external activities are an expression of something very genuine within our hearts. And to recognize that and appreciate that in others. Srila Prabhupada was expert at that. Even if a devotee was having serious problems, if Prabhupada saw that deep down inside that person was very sincere, he loved that devotee, forgave him and helped him in every way. While other people were just condemning and criticizing and starting rumors. And also, though, sometimes devotees were praising somebody who had accomplished so much, and Prabhupada would ignore them. Yes, this Ramdas Vishwas, he was chanting Ramayana 24 hours a day, singing Ram's names and describing Ram's pastimes. And when he described Ram's pastimes, it was enthralling, it was enchanting. Even someone like Raghunath Bhatta Goswami just couldn't hear enough from Ram Das. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu totally ignored him, because he understood his motive in his heart was he was praising Ram because he wanted to be Ram. He didn't want to serve Ram. He didn't want to love Ram. He wanted to be Ram. He wanted to love Ram so that he could get in return the position of Ram. And for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who happens to be Ram, that kind of love is not love at all. So, Putana is taking this role in Krishna. Krishna's letting things unfold. He could have stopped it immediately, but he lets people go through their egos. That's one of the mysteries of this material world, why God just lets people go like this. Ultimately, the laws of karma, everything comes back to you. But still, you know, for a while, you could really make a lot of karma and do a lot of good or bad in the world. You know, she killed all these babies. And from Krishna's perspective, he saw that after she killed him, she was going to kill every other baby in Brajbhumi. She had such determination. And believe it or not, it's for sure that Praputana, honestly, deep down inside, knew that she was right. She was doing the right thing. Otherwise, how could you have such conviction and determination to actually do it and keep doing it? There was no regret. Because when the ego thinks I'm in the center, anything could be justified. So she was like a sword in a very decorated sheath. She looked innocent, sweet, merciful, compassionate, highly cultured, sophisticated, and enticingly beautiful. All the qualities that are attributed to the highest level to Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, She embodied all of that. But inside, was death. But you can't fool Krishna. Krishna knew exactly what was happening from the moment she walked in the room. And he just kind of played with her. Just like Lord Nrsingadev for a while made Hiranyakashipu think that he was winning the fight. He was just playing with him. Hiranyakashipu was in Narasingadev's grasp, and he was fighting, and he got out of his grasp. Now that in itself shows that whoever his opponent was limited and vulnerable. He couldn't hold Hiranyakashipu. And when Hiranyakashipu saw, if he can't hold me, then I can defeat him. He's finished. He's nothing. I've already proven myself. Now the rest is a detail. That was his ego. But the Bhagavatam describes that Narasingadev was playing with him just like a big cat plays with a tiny little mouse. You know, if the cat just eats the mouse, then, you know, it's food, but it's not fun. But if the cat just, you know, captures the mouse and then lets the mouse go, and the mouse goes, and the cat just goes, and it's fun, play. So Krishna was playing with Putana. Put her on the breast, and she thought, now he's dead. Suck my breast, little baby. And he sucked. Oh, how he sucks. When Krishna wants to suck, he's the ultimate supreme sucker. And he proved it. He just took all the poison, enough for hundreds of grown men. He just sucked it all and didn't affect him. And he sucked milk. Because, you know, somehow or other, he was so all-powerful in his loveliness that some little bit of maternal affection. And he sucked her life. He held on to her and squeezed her. And the Bhagavatam said he pressurized all the points of her body, like the ultimate acupressurist. You know how you push different meridian points in the body and heal the body? Well, he got these meridians in her breast and started pushing her points like acupressure. And it affected every single cell of her body. It was going wild with different types of sensations and pain. Her entire body was racked with pain. Every cellular molecule of her body was racked with pain because he was just pushing the points that were just sending all these charges to every part of her. That's a Bhagavatam. I'm kind of putting in more modern language. The Bhagavatam explains it something like that. And she ran outside, and she grew 12 miles in size, and then she fell down. And Jiva Goswami explains in this regard that her whole life was killing people. And even in her death, she was killing. Because she killed all these trees. She was in this big forest pasture ground, and when she fell, 12 miles of trees were crushed. But Krishna is so absolutely thorough in his pastimes that by his yogamaya transcendental divine potency, when she was completely disoriented, screaming in pain, leave me, child, leave me, running, she ran toward Kamsa's favorite fruit tree grove. And when she fell down, she crushed all Kamsa's trees where he was getting fruits to enjoy. The very person that she was trying to please. So these are a few thoughts about this extraordinary pastime we're reading about today. Is there any comments or questions? Yes, Prue.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj, for a nice lecture. Maharaj, I wanted to know, as you were telling that the false ego makes one think that what he is doing is right, his perceptions are right. So, in our life, how we should see to it, because you know, we feel that this is my conviction and this is perfect, and the from lectures or from different places, we take those points only and we say, Prabhupada said this or this said this, like that, and we go ahead. So, whether we are going on right track or some other place, how we should come to know so that it will not be a false ego but a right thing. And secondly, when we see, suppose some juniors are there, they are in position, we feel that they are also wrong. So how we should guide them so that they will also be helped of that. So one is for personal and one.
Very strong. Maya is very, very strong. Only by the grace of Krishna can you do what you're saying. We have to be very sincere. Trinadapi sunichena. According to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the foundational first principle of a Vaishnava's character is simplicity. Simplicity and humility. Simplicity means to not have ulterior motives, to not have an agenda. And we simply have to be sincere to be able to evaluate that. Do I really have an agenda? If we're actually sincere, Krishna will reveal to us our hidden agendas, our egos. If we're not sincere to give it up, then Krishna, then Maya will empower us to justify anything and think that I am right, everyone else is wrong. So one of the qualities of simplicity and humility in Vaishnava society is to actually go to sincere advanced devotees and inquire submissively, whoever we are. Being senior doesn't mean you shouldn't inquire submissively. On a spiritual level, being senior means that's why you're senior, because you take proper guidance. Otherwise, that tendency is there. We take a little piece of what Prabhupada says and make that our mission. But if we're actually sincere, we'll try to understand Prabhupada, not only the whole picture of what he said, but how he personally applied what he said in his life, and try to follow in his footsteps, and try to seek guidance and direction from people who are honestly and sincerely following in his footsteps. Basically, religious fanaticism, whether it's Christian or Muslim or Vaishnav, whatever it is, Buddhist, basically fanaticism usually comes, it's not that what you profess and what you pursue is not in the scripture. It's usually always there. But it's focusing on one thing and taking it out of the context of the whole teaching. That's where fanaticism comes from. In Christianity, Jesus did say, I am the way and the truth and the light, and there's no other Father, there's no other way to God except through me. But if we read, actually, the whole text in a proper spirit, we see what he represented, and we can understand what that means in the context of the whole picture. But if you just take it out, then everyone else is demoniac except us. Yes? And there's no, you're all damned to hell except me and mine. I am mine. In Islam, you can take certain passages out of the Quran and justify hating and killing. But if you see it in the whole context of the spirit of it, it doesn't fit. And unfortunately, we can do the same thing with Prabhupada's books. We could do the same thing with Bhagavad Gita. That's why Prabhupada wrote Bhagavad Gita as it is. Here is Bhagavad Gita, directly, personally, Krishna's words. And Srila Prabhupada wrote that there was over 100 translations of Bhagavad Gita in English. And all the translations were quite right. But people were just taking certain aspects out of it and making that the theme of the Gita. Yes? If we can do it with Krishna's words, we can do it with Prabhupada's words too. You know, in Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, there's, you know, certain people who are said to be sahajas, or certain people, there's all these apasampradayas. All these apasampradayas are from the books of Rupa Goswami. Perfect books. Books of, you know, from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Perfect books. Just focusing on certain things. According to our egos, we take it and manipulate it and believe in it. So yes, we can do that with Prabhupada's books. Not only can, but we do. And Prabhupada said this. We can have wars over different things Prabhupada said. There's just no substitute from just actually being humble and sincere and simple. And trying to see in relation to the whole picture, and trying to see, you know, how Prabhupada lived, and not just certain incidents of his life. You know, Prabhupada was he was soft like a rose and hard like a thunderbolt. If your propensity is a thunderbolt, then anything like a rose you're going to see as an enemy to Prabhupada, only thunderbolt. Or if you're just like a rose, you'll think the thunderbolt is misrepresenting Prabhupada. Prabhupada could be both. And how is he both? Ego is I know. Simplicity is I don't know. I need help to know. I need association of devotees. We need to discuss these things. I need seniors who could help me. But ultimately it comes back to our own humility, simplicity, and sincerity. What is our motives? Do we want pure devotional service, or do we want pure devotional service? Do we want to serve the principle of pure devotional service, or do we want the philosophy of pure devotional service to serve us? That's what it comes down to. That's why Srila Prabhupada writes, pure devotional service is very rare. He quotes Rupa Goswami. manushyanam sahasreshu kashchid yatati siddhaye. It's very rare. But then Prabhupada quotes Sanatana Goswami and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that if one is sincere and serious, he puts a list of three things, and obviously Krishna easily gives pure devotional service if you have these three qualities. That means these three qualities must be extremely, supremely important for us. Pure devotional service, which is so rare, Krishna easily gives it if we have these three qualities. We are sincere, and the second is we are serious. What's the difference between being sincere and serious? They sound similar, don't they? It seems like being sincere means you're serious. And being serious means you're sincere. It's almost like Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Mastavan, Mastavan. There may be some technical differences about being sincere and serious, but it's very important. And then the next one basically explains what it means to be sincere and serious. To have no ulterior motives. If we are sincere, serious, and have no ulterior motives, Krishna will easily give pure devotionals. He will reveal everything as it is. Evam parampara praktam. There is the parampara. But to actually enter into the spirit of the parampara, this is what is required. Does that answer your question? First, try to understand the first part. Any other, one more question? Microphone should be sent to Sri Dhamma Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So Maharaj, in relation to the example that you gave about the cat...
This battery is symbolic of chanting our rounds every day. We don't recharge ourselves, we lose our powers.
So Maharaj...
Then the cat of Maya will... play with us.
Yes?
So much talking about this cat and the rat example, Maya, like the cat, also plays with us, and you know, we apparently feel that we are making progress in Krishna consciousness when actually we have been just let loose for some time. And then many times devotees, after they spend significant time in Krishna consciousness, you know, the previous conditionings, they really come and Maya really haunts us and really catches us and gets in a grip. So this is what I read. It is called a midlife crisis or something, where devotees really get into the difficulties which they used to experience before they came to Krishna consciousness, or maybe the initial years of Krishna consciousness. So just wanted to know your guidance on how do we really tackle this issue, which many times haunts many of the people who apparently are, as mentioned in the previous question, senior devotees.
Keep your battery charged. Let's see. The danger is, in this midlife crisis that you're talking about, or any other life crisis, whether it's a beginning life crisis, a midlife crisis, an ending of the life crisis. Material world, life is a constant crisis. That we should understand. Otherwise, we may not even survive till that midlife crisis. But the real danger is in any of these levels of crisis, especially midlife crisis, is when you think you are the cat. That's the problem. Like in the West, everyone wants to be what they call a cool cat. But when you think you're the cat, you think you're in control. And that's what Maya does. When Maya makes the mouse think he's a cat, then there's real danger, because you really think you're in control, and then you're finished. But if you really understand that I'm a little mouse and Maya's like this big, gigantic, universal cat, and she's playing with me, and you recognize I'm a little mouse, what do? You're serious, you're sincere to chant Hare Krishna and charge your batteries, and then with the power you gain from that, you cry out for Krishna's shelter, and he hears you. The sincerity in which we chant is like our microphone by which Krishna hears us when we call out for him. Yeah? But if you think you're the cat, you don't cry out for shelter. You think, I have it made. You become complacent. Become inattentive. That's where the crisis is, when we become inattentive. Inattentive to the powers of Maya. Inattentive to our own vulnerability, our own weakness. Inattentive to the absolute dependence we have on the shelter of Krishna, the shelter of the holy name, the shelter of the Vaishnavas, the shelter of the spiritual masters. We need shelter. The cat doesn't cry for shelter. The cat thinks he has things under control. But the mouse understands nothing's under my control. Krishna's the controller. The little mouse's voice is very weak, right? Rats, they're a little louder. Cats go, meow. But mice, they're just like, Okay, now let me show you the difference of whether the battery's charged or not. A little mouse, And we understand we have no power on our own. We recharge the battery. We chant the holy names. We read Srimad Bhagavatam. We associate with devotees. We come for yatras. We come to the Sunday feast in a proper mood. And then the little mouse, when we cry out for shelter, which we desperately need because we know we're in the claws of this mighty cat of Maya. We understand, here I am. We have the microphone of God's grace, and we can be heard. Does that answer your question? Thank you, Hare Krishna Prabhu, for being an instrument of Krishna's Lila Shakti. You are apparent, spaced out, inefficient, inattentive ability to serve answered a very profound question. Thank you. But please, keep the batteries charged. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.